So to come very close here, Mr. Srinivas Palepu, more close, Orpas. Okay, right, a little bit there. Can you see okay here? Yeah, this is the only screen we have here, so I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. So we're kind of showing we're developing a curriculum. Actually, I am eternal servant of Krishna, okay? I'm in Maya, okay? I belong to ISKCON, okay? I'm a sannyasi initiating guru. I'm the head of the Anjana Sudha Academy, which is our esoteric organization, with members such as Monkey and Piggy and Uncle Gizmo. It's kind of a jayarama.us. It's our webpage. But that's internal and more creative. And then exoteric is the North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, federally registered corporation, educational corporation in the state of Tennessee. Yeah. And with that, we're doing these educational programs and stuff like that. So developing kind of parallel, you know. So we're developing this curriculum because we have the, what does it say there? Can you read that now? Okay, yeah. The Bhaktivedanta Library. What does next line say?
Anjana Sudha
Academy. Okay, next line. Okay, next line. Okay, this is a vision test. Revised 20th July 77. Okay. So because Prabhupada gave us so many books. Okay, it says Sanskrit there. Okay. So there's a very nice professor at the University of California, George L. Hart, and he wrote a book called A Rapid Sanskrit Method, and published by Motilal Banasidas. So in the preface he says, why learn Sanskrit, right? Why learn Sanskrit? So he says, Sanskrit, is like Chinese, Arabic, Greek, and Latin, one of the few languages which has been a carrier of culture over a long period of time. Thus, the variety of writings in it and the quantity of those writings are staggering. An incomplete list of subjects treated in Sanskrit, usually with great prolixity, is as follows. Okay, there you go. I come closer. Okay. The four Vedas, the Brahmanas and Aranyakas, the Upanishads, grammar, epic Puranic literature, including 18 major Puranas, 18 minor Puranas, and hundreds of Stala Puranas. Works on medicine, logic, astronomy and astrology, mathematics, law books, architecture, music, and on most of these subjects there are immense literature still extant. Indeed, a rough estimate of the works which will be listed in the new Catalogus Catalogorum. This is a bibliography that Indologists, they maintain. And it'll say, for example, a treatise on medicine in the Maharaj of Mysore's library. And it gives some little description like that. So he's saying that, you know, this was actually some time ago. This has been almost 20 years ago. That time they knew 160,000 ancient Sanskrit texts like that. And all these subjects. So you start comparing this to Arabic languages or Greek classical texts, it's just like, there's no comparison. It's like, you know, Godzilla and Donald Duck, like that. It's just so vast, the Sanskrit literature. But the British had this whole propaganda program to cover all this, and, you know, so people are now just beginning to appreciate. Yeah. Many so difficult that it would take years of study to properly understand them. Sanskrit does have its share of great writers. Kalidas ranks with the greatest poets. Panini is without question the greatest pre-modern grammarian. I think maybe we might say he's the greatest grammarian. Yeah. The Mahabharata ranks with the Iliad and Odyssey. And the Bhagavad Purana is amongst the finest works of devotion ever written, being equaled in my opinion only by other works in the Indian languages. So he's pointing out, and not just him, there are many other scholars who also point out the potency and the power of the Bhagavatam. We have one disciple, Radhika Raman, Dr. Ravi Gupta. And he did his doctorate in Sanskrit and theology at Oxford. And he got it at 22 years old, one of the youngest people to receive a doctorate. And, he went through homeschooling. His parents are devotees. He's a devotee. So he said his one professor the university would bring from South India, Dr. something Rao, Narsingha Rao from the University of Madras. You know him at all? He's a little famous in India. He's an emeritus professor. So he told them, he said, I've read all the major Sanskrit works and many of the minor works. I'm not being proud, but I've read almost all the major works like that. And so, and when in the Puranas it says that the different Puranas, they look like stars in the sky, so beautiful, wonderful, elevated, until the moon of Srimad Bhagavatam comes up. And he said it's not an exaggeration for the sophistication of the grammar, the beauty of the poetry, and the depth of the philosophy. There's no comparison, like that. It's in a category by itself amongst all the Vedic literatures. Even atheists who say this whole thing developed by chance, by evolution, they still say, isn't evolution wonderful? It produced the Bhagavad Purana. Wow, this great work. Joy. Okay. So, the Bhaktivedanta library. We have... from Shruti, the only thing we have is Shruti from Prabhupada is the Isopanishad. Everything else is Smriti, things developed by the comprehension of the sages. Shruti is that which is directly heard. So Isopanishad is from which Veda? Last night we heard. From the white Yajurveda. There's also a black Yajurveda. So Isopanishad. And then there's the Bhagavad Gita, Isopanishad, because Isopanishad is very kind of general. And Bhagavad Gita starts to talk more directly about Bhagavan, but doesn't go beyond the Paramatma feature very much. And then finally, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the heart of all the Bhaktivedanta library. So Prabhupada also gave us the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is actually a Srimad Bhagavatam class. You see Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, they take one verse, they just chant it over and over again, relishing it. And they're living Srimad Bhagavatam, always absorbed in thinking Krishna's pastimes. So they're showing us how to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. And then what's the relationship between the Krishna book and the Bhagavatam? It's a summary study of the 10th canto. In light of the Bhagavad?
The autumn chapter.
Yeah, one chapter. And the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That's the introduction, 35 pages. Yeah. It's about 4 pages talking about the summum bonum, and after that, it's 35 pages. It's just a very nice, summary. If somebody says, "Well, I know Ramanuja and different people like that, but you're Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do you have a biography of him? Why? Can we read it in one night?" In Spanish, it's printed as a separate book. It's very nice. Oh my God, what happened there? Okay, we just... something, I'll go backwards here. Help, 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 help. Okay. Okay. Light of the Bhagavat. Okay. And then Teachings of Lord Chaitanya is a separate book that Prabhupada did. Yeah. And it covers most of the philosophical parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's very nice. Yeah. And then summarizing everything, there's Nectar of Instruction. It is a little brother, and the big brother is Nectar of Devotion, Bhagaswami. And he talks about the most simple things up to the most complicated. He actually extracts out the bhakti portion of all these, and then in his book, Nectar of Devotion. And then Prabhupada also had letters. He gave us letters, lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam, lectures on Bhagavad Gita, and just general lectures, and room conversations. So all together, there's Hanuman delivering the message to Sita. There's one volume of Isopanishad, one volume of Bhagavad Gita, 36 volumes in Srimad Bhagavatam, if you make a regular-sized book, 17 volumes Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, Nectar Instruction, Krishna Book, Light of the Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya, teachings, and 25 volumes of lecture books, probably. And letters, 7 volumes of letters. How many letters do you write, you know, by typing them? And 32 volumes of room conversation for a total of 125 books. See, you stack all these things up, right? You know, when you have, remember, somebody who has all these books, some people do, yeah, I bring them and put them like that, you know, physically. And it's just really impressive, you know. So some people say you should go to other acharyas and Gaudiya Math acharyas because Prabhupada didn't give you everything, you know. So I mentioned that one time when this is all stacked up there, and one boy said, oh my God, thank God he didn't give us everything. Because it's just overwhelming, you know. A professional author who has the contract, everything's fixed, he knows what he's doing, it takes 2 years to write a full-size book. It's not an easy job writing a book. You can write something, but nobody will read it. You know? Okay, it's 5 pages and they'll give up or something. You know? But a book, it's interesting, it develops your attention, it flows. Oh, 3 pages a day is considered, you know, good professional work like that. At the end of the week, if you have like 15 pages done, good, it's okay. You know? So 2 years to produce one book. Now, 225 books times 2, it would have taken 250 years to produce that many books, a little mathematics here. So therefore, you know, Prabhupada was doing the work of about 25 writers like that. 25 professional writers would have had to try and keep up with these. Anyway, he wasn't just doing that all. He was also traveling all over the world, everything else like that, you know. Yeah. There you go. So here's the typewriters there. All the professional writers are chattering away. Die. So Prabhupada keep dying. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, the same thing over and over again. You know, it's such, you go through almost anything, you get new information, new perspective. For example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a 10-page purport wherein and Krishnadas Kaviraj is mentioning that Shankaracharya tries to prove from several verses of Vedanta Sutra that the bodies of Sankarshan, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, and Vasudeva are all material, like that, you know. So in the purport, Prabhupada basically, as far as I can tell, he's summarizing Sanatan Goswami's refutation of Shankaracharya's proof from the Vedanta Sutra that their bodies are material like that. And so it's a quick summary study of this whole work by Sanatan Goswami. It could be published. It's very nice. He has a separate little, you know, monograph like that. You know? So many things like that. Prabhupada's just tossing in from different texts, literatures. It's not like this, you know, light work. So he's not an ordinary human being, you know. And so that's, you know, our basic summary of the books of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says in the very beginning, we should try and study these things. In the beginning of Prahlad Maharaj, he says from the very youth one should try and become Krishna conscious, use it for that purpose. And so Prabhupada says these books should be taught in the schools and universities. You know, so should be an academic study is not wrong if it's done with a, you know, devotional perspective. Yeah. Sankhya Purvaka Nama Garanatabi. So how do we, what kind of regular programs can we have? So you're suggesting some curriculum here. Sample lifetime, okay? It's your Associate of Literature degree. Light of the Bhagavat, Lilamrita, Life and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Nectar of Instruction. Yeah, I guess some things, right? Light of the Bhagavat is an outreach book. After you read that, oh, that's nice, very interesting. Okay, well, here's the biography of the author. Oh, you can read it, very nice. Then the 35 pages, summary of Lord Chaitanya's life. And Nectar of Instruction, summary of everything. And then you have a very complete grasp on our whole movement, everything else like that. Bachelor of Literature, Bhakti Shastri. Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Part 1, Isopanishad, and these are getting me a little more depth like that, some perspective. But this is the Bhakti Shastri degree and it's gone, right? And then... Associate of Literature. You should go over these again. Okay. Yeah, but now, you know, second time, more depth. And then Srimad Bhagavatam, Part 1, this is for your Bhakti Vaibhava, Baba said. Sannyasis should know this. Master, right? Swami, right? Bachelor, Brahmachari. Brahmachari, Sannyasi. It's very natural. And finally, PhD, yeah, Doctor of Philosophy. Teacher of love of wisdom. That's the meaning. You don't have to teach anything. You have to inspire people how to love truth, love wisdom. So it's Bhaktivedanta. Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti by Baba, Bhaktivedanta, whole Srimad Bhagavatam. And then probably, this is suggesting, you know, the professor, Acharya, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's one curriculum probably suggested like that, systematic reading. Okay, along with that, Psalms, hymns, Krishna book. And Rupa Goswami kind of summarizes everything, progressively, Upadeshamrita, summary, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the whole science, and finally, Vidagdava and Madhava and Lalita Madhava, he gives a whole, you know, like, sample, he shows in two dramas, he shows how all these different rasas combine together to make different experiences in Krishna consciousness. So this is what I'm teaching at the Bhaktivedanta College. And that's a university accredited course there. They graduated their first students last year with bachelor's degrees. And so now they can go anywhere. You know, it's a fully accredited degree now. Belgium. Okay, skip all this.
Okay. So are you the only faculty member or are you all people?
Excuse me?
Are you the only faculty there?
Oh my God, no. I'm one of the small ones there. But if you just chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam, you'll become perfect. No, there's who else? Radhika Raman, our disciple. So many people, I don't know everybody. Yadunandana, he's doing his master's degree now for the same program. Rabindra Swarup, I don't know, it's like, you know, many devotees, you know, Dutta Karma, I think other people like that are coming. And it's a British system where you study one thing for maybe 1 or 2 weeks, write your paper, then go to a different topic. So the faculty doesn't have to be there the whole time, like the whole year, they come and teach a certain topic. And you have some kind of core faculty that's always there, like that.
And what are people doing after graduating?
Well, they have degrees in theology, so they're applying, bachelor's degrees, so then they're applying. Some are just keeping that. Some are going ahead then applying for master's and doctorate programs, different places, you know, Oxford, like that. We have a very strong program in Oxford. There's a Center for Hindu Studies organized by Shonaka Rishi, and that's affiliated. Actually, they got formal affiliation with Oxford University, which is really prestigious and difficult to get. You know, the Center for Jewish Studies applied, I don't know, many years ago, and after 6 years they got a letter back saying, "We've received your letter and we are considering it." But devotees actually was more than 1 year. Yeah, because they pretty like pretty much what they're doing. So what happens is devotees are, you know, they work with the center, but they are officially matriculated into some college in Oxford, like that, depending on their studies like that. Some devotees are studying science and theology, you know. Others doing theology, Sanskrit, like that. You know? So you can, you know, take your bachelor's degree and then go different places like that. And then Radhika, he graduated, and now he's teaching now. He applied a few places and finally got a nice position at a center college in Kentucky. Like that. It's very nice. It's a Christian school, but they have a section on world religions, so he's teaching that. And everybody's very, you know, he's presenting Krishna consciousness, you know, in a mild, nice way, and then people are interested, and the more they're hearing, the more they're enthused. So they asked him to take students, because it's like very, you know, more higher class colleagues, take on the Christmas break, can you take some students to India on a religious tour? And so he and his father, who's a devotee, Ananta Roop, they arranged it. They were going to permit 8 students or something, but finally 20 signed up, including one professor. So finally, and they're paying for it. The university's paying for, you know, them to go and stuff. You know? So look at that, very progressive. Like that. And all over the place this is happening. More and more devotees are going into academic world and stuff like that, and you know, preaching like that. Yeah. Okay, so then, okay, this we give us on Friday night. On Friday night, you have this lecture, and afterwards, a little prasad, and you meet everybody, you know? Yeah? Huh?
Okay. We need a mic. Is everyone able to hear?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. So this is what we do on Friday nights. This is the Bhaktivedanta library. Because probably there's so many books, it's just, you know, this is a little sample, you know? But what is the heart? What is the heart of the Bhaktivedanta Library? Srimad Bhagavatam. And you see, everything is related to that. The Krishna book, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. And so, you know, we just somehow or other, you know, studied, appreciated in different modes like that. But Prabhupada said, if you just chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam, you'll become perfect. No other thing needs to be done. Right? You know, some of us have these bodies. He said, but if you want to accelerate the process, then read the books. You know? So, okay, some people have this interest. They want to do that. In New Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, just work hard, take care of the cows, the land. At night, drink sufficient milk, read the Krishna book, and sleep soundly. And that was it. He told them that was their, you know, sufficient. There's no problem. But different people have different intelligence. Yeah, an idle mind is the... Okay. Yeah. And so some people, they have these intelligence. They have to read, think, study. Okay, so we'll occupy you. We'll give you, I don't know how many pages of books we got here, you know, 100 books. But we have 100 times 400, 40,000 pages. Actually, I heard Prabhupada say, he said, we have so many books that even in one lifetime you cannot read them all. You know, so okay. So you have to find your way. Yeah, find what's good for you, interesting for you, what you like, you know. Yeah. Okay, Hare Krishna. Now that's Friday night. Okay, now you take a little rest. Okay, wake up, come refreshed for the weekend seminar on the Padapadma. Open. Or some go to My Docs or Recent or something like that. I don't know. Okay. So we go up here. Oh, HPS. So there it is. Okay. Click, click. Okay, my USB drive. Click, click. American Bhagavad Curriculum. Let me go down here to... what is it going to be? Padapadma? I guess it's secondary, I guess, where it is. Secondary, I guess. No, it's not there. Well, I asked Bhakti Shastri. Graduate. There we go. Okay, Padapadma, the lotus feet of Krishna. Okay, first we have 12 canto summary. Now first we'll look at the whole thing. Push F5, you idiot. There you go, okay. Padapadma, the lotus feet of Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam, cantos 1 and 2. This is the wrong one, okay. We'll load the other one. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's still loading this one. Okay. Yeah, this is it here. Okay. Radhe. Okay. Okay. No, what is this? This is not right. Okay. Hmm. 12 canto summary. Oh my god, until we've lost this whole thing. Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava Daite. Gokula Taruni Mandala Mahite. Okay. Okay. This is it here then. But I think it's going to tell us the wrong thing here. Okay, all 12 cantos. Okay, this is the Padapadma seminar, but within that is a summary of all 12 cantos. Okay, so who's this?
Vyasadeva.
Talking to?
Vyasadeva.
Vyasadeva. Yeah, it's all good. Very nice painting. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam is complete in 12 cantos. It's going to be easier for me if I move to the other side here. How many cantos? How many texts? Okay. So here's a whole summary. Cantos 1 and 2 are Krishna's lotus feet. cantos 3-9, rise up to his lotus face. The 10th canto is his smiling face, and 11 and 12 are the crown on his head. Okay? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God. There's one Purana which describes cantos 1 and 2, cantos 3 and 4, canto 5, like that. It describes actually the parts of his body like that. Yeah. Yeah. General summary. Yeah. So the first two are lotus feet of Krishna, and then 3-9, all about the based on the manvantars. I guess we'll explain this. Then in... some airplane pilot program here. Does it go like this? Like this? Like that?
Yes.
This way. Okay. Okay. Like that. Haribol. Haribol. Okay. Haribol.
Hare Krishna. This is the Wizard of Oz speaking.
Now it's going to be incomprehensible because there's too much bass. You got to turn the...
but slightly away from your lips.
Okay. So you've got to decrease the bass. Yeah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. That's better. Okay. So anyway, cantos 1 and 2 are his lotus feet. Then 3-9, it discusses... 3-9... Then discusses the based on manvantaras. That's the didactic method used, like that. Then 10th and 11th are Krishna's pastimes, and somewhere here I don't have something like that. You know. Okay, epilogue, right? What's an epilogue? Kind of closes everything, summarizes like that. You know. Okay. 1 and 2, cantos 1 and 2 we will discuss later. Now let's see how they fit into the other 10 cantos. Okay. Cantos 3-9 discuss Manu avatars and other immanent avatars, incarnations. And canto 10 and 11 discuss Krishna's pastimes. Krishna is not an avatar of God. He is avatara avatari, the source of all incarnations. To appreciate his full personality, we must first see his different partial incarnations. These are presented in cantos 3-9. Types of avatars, Purusha avatars. They are like the prison minister, prison warden, and prison guards. They are always with the material world. So who is like the, what are the avatars? Who are the Purusha avatars? You know? Sanskrit? No.
Rama?
No. Purusha avatars. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu? Karanadakshaya Vishnu? Okay, now which one of them is the prison minister of prisons?
I mean, the highest is Karanadakshaya.
Yeah, yeah. And so then within each prison there is a warden. Like that. And everywhere, aware of everything. Yeah, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. So it's what they have, their different functions like that.
I heard prison minister was Duka, right?
Well, no, because she's within. It's kind of difficult to distinguish between Mahavishnu and Shiva. They have little, very similar positions. Yeah. Yeah. Lila avatars. They come to the prison sometimes to give a certain lesson. So Nrisimhadev, Ram is coming to show us ideal grihastha life. Rishabhdev is coming to show us ideal sannyas life. So they come to show one pastime, one thing like that. You know. Yeah. Manu avatars. They are in charge of the universe for a fixed period during each day of Brahma. Right? Brahma is a demigod in charge of the universe, but he is not managing things from moment to moment. Just as on a ship there is a captain, but also officers of the watch. If you go to the San Francisco airport, you'll find one thing which says general manager on his door. And next to it you may see is something which says duty officer. You know? So somebody always has to be in charge of things. So the general manager is not there all the time. So Brahma is the demigod in charge of this whole thing. But, you know, the Manus take charge of different sections of each of Brahma's days. Brahma is the head of the universe. And each of his days, there are 14 Manu avatars, one after another. The Srimad Bhagavatam takes us through them in cantos 3-9. along the way. With them, we will also see so many other incarnations of Krishna until in the 10th canto, we can understand Krishna directly. Right? Yeah. So it takes us, the didactic method is the Manu avatars, but it's talking about Leela avatars, Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Shakti Abhesha avatars. That's all. Yeah. Okay. Details of cantos 3 through 9. Okay. The first Manu, Swayambhuva Manu and his children. This is most of it. 3 through 7 is all about the first Manu, who's Swayambhuva Manu and his children. And then 8 is about the other 13 Manus, right? And 9 is about our Manu. So very well organized. Yeah. There's a question. Please describe the Manus and their children and all the incarnations that occur. Okay. Yeah. Canto 3 through 7. Some weird thing there. Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Sadarupa had 5 children. 3 daughters, Devahuti, Akuti, and Prasuti, the Uti sisters. 2 sons, Uttanapada and?
Priya.
Yeah. So here's a mnemonic, dap up, or in Spanish, dap up. Right? Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, Priyavrata. Dap up. The order that these children appear in the Bhagavatam. Like that. So that's the whole thing. Yeah. 7 cantos, dap up. Yeah. So here we go. Yeah. Analysis by chapter groups. What have I got here? Okay. So, Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, and then it continues afterwards, and here we have Priyavrata, and then finishing off with Uttanapada. Yeah? So, chapters 1 through 4 are Vidura talking to Uddhava, and then Vidura talks to Maitreya, and he begins to explain everything. So most of this is conversations between Maitreya and Vidura. And they talk about, Devahuti, and she was married to Kardama. And their son was? Kapila. Okay, finished. Chapter 1 then talks about the daughters and Akuti, Akuti, and she married Ruchi, and they had Vishnu and Narayan and Lakshmi for their children. Then 2 through 7 is Prasuti, and she married?
Daksha.
And their child was?
Sati.
But she committed suicide before she was old enough to get married, old enough to have a child. Well, why is that? Okay. Yeah. It's a whole history. And then Uttanapada, right? And he was famous because his son was?
Dhruva.
Yeah, like that. You've seen the movie? The Hindi movie, like that? When his father comes and says, "Oh, how's the kingdom? Oh, Pita, very good. Well, how's your son? Oh, he's gone to the forest in anxiety. Yeah, your own son, you know." He says, in Hindi, he says, "And all this for a good-looking chick." Like that, right? For a good-looking. All his problems. Yeah. Okay, Uttanapada. But he's especially famous because his son was Dhruva. And then chapters 13 through 14, there's 6 generations from Dhruva coming to Anga and Vena. Who was Vena? Is he a good guy or a bad guy?
Bad guy.
What did he do bad? What did he do?
He never treated Brahmins and other. In his childhood itself, he used to kill his own.
Yeah, when they would disagree with him when he was playing with him, he'd drown them in the river. That was a real monster. And when his father became so depressed about everything, he just left and took sannyas. And then he became the king. And then he stopped the worship of Vishnu. And the brahmanas said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Why are you proposing some god other than me?" Like that. So they, by high-pitched sound, they killed him. That's what that means. You know. Then from his body, what happened?
Yeah. Some rishis, they produced two children, one male and one female.
Yeah.
Both said to be incarnations of Vishnu and Lakshmi.
But before that, when the poison came out, it produced Bahuka. It was a short black guy with red hair and very passionate, lusty guy. And he said, "Sit down over there." And he said, "Sit down." And that was all the contamination came out. So they churned his thigh and took from his semina. Basically, it's a first example of biological engineering, cloning, I guess, like that. You know? So the same thing. So then Prithu was born, and from that, and Archie, his wife. And he's a Shakti Vesh avatar. What is his Shakti? Huh? Yeah, but what is it? Narada is Shakti Vesh avatar for Bhakti. Four Kumaras are Shakti Vesh avatar for Jnana. Indra is a Shakti Vesh avatar of Krishna's lusty nature. You know? Yeah. So he's a Shakti Vesh avatar of Krishna's ability to maintain the people. The earth was displeased because people weren't worshipping her properly, and so she wasn't supplying them food. So he took out after her with his bow and arrows and going to kill her. So she took the form of a cow and she said, I don't care. You're still not maintaining the people. Still you deserve to die because that's your function, your job. And she said, well, if you kill me, then there'll be nobody to maintain anybody. And he said, by my own potency, I can maintain them. So he was an empowered representative. Prabhupada says to understand political science, we should read his speeches, you know, political science. So Prithu. Then after that, it goes down to Maharaj Prachini Barishat. Right? And he was a very good guy. He was like a very pious, you know, chief executive officer of some big international corporation or something like that. And he was actually a king, you know. And the Brahmins said you should engage in, you know, using animals, you know, for developing drugs and chemicals like that and testing. For example, they used to test hairspray, ladies' hairspray, because it might burn the eyes, and they would get sued a lot of money. So how did they test it? They used to force rabbits' eyes open so they couldn't close them and shoot it directly into their eyes. Oh, yeah. So many animals, no? It used to be that the tradition to use so many. And when the animals were being killed as part of the scientific process, it was called sacrifice. You see, sacrifice, you know, rhesus monkey number 37 today, and we'll cut his brains open and, you know, cut the, you know. So it was so much animal sacrifice was going on. And he was doing the same things. The brahmanas were engaging in animal sacrifices for punya, for the citizens, and so many things. Then Narada Muni came to his house, and he was a very pious person. You know, you see his preaching program, you know. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of examples of how to preach, especially Narada Muni's preaching. It's a whole project that's going through, and how does he deal? Because he's very different people. So Prachini Barishat was a pious man, you know, but it's misdirected. But he wasn't going to listen to a devotee. You know, you're a very nice, you're a religious person, but you're not a scientist like that. It was just kind of his attitude. My Brahmins are scholars and all these things, and you know. So Narada Muni came to his house and he said, "Oh, Narada Muni, come in, please. Would you stay for lunch? We have all vegetarian prasad every day." Okay. And after lunch, the Narada Muni said, "Oh, Maharaj, would you like to hear a story?" So after lunch, everyone likes to hear a story after lunch. So he told him the whole story of Paranjana. And it's about how many? It's eight chapters. It's like a whole little Bhagavad Gita. And the whole thing goes with Paranjana, his activities, his animal sacrifices, he goes to hell and everything else. And all, very, you know, very nice thing to study or produce just by itself. So after he kind of finishes this, then Maharaj Prachini Barishat says to Narada, he says, "Narada," he says, "Yes, Maharaj, I'm Prachini Barishat, I'm Paranjana, aren't I, Narada?" He says, "Yes." And so he says, "Very clever." He said, "But I can see what you're saying is a fact. You know, these so-called scientists who have been engaging me in sacrificing all these animals, saying there's no soul and things like that, they're less educated, and I'm going to go to hell for doing all this, you know." So he just took off. He moved right into the Hare Krishna temple in San Francisco, left a note for his sons saying, "I'm gone. You take over. It's your responsibility. The ministers will run things while you're gone." His sons were all off doing austerities, like good boys, to become good grihastas so they could become lawyers and doctors and engineers, doing austerities. But where were they doing austerities? They didn't go to the university. Where did they go?
In a sea.
Huh?
In water.
Yeah, they went under one lake. They're meditating there, sitting there, and chanting a mantra given by Lord Shiva. And they became very self-realized, you know, very advanced. So they came out, and they took charge of the kingdom, and they all married one girl. This is not polygamy. What is this? Polygamy. This is what? The Latin word. Polygamy is one gentleman with several wives, like Vasudeva. This is polyandria. Right? So, and this example is what is basically one of the things that finally convinced Draupadi to marry all these guys. She wasn't going to do this. Forget it. I don't care what your mother says. I'm not going to marry all you guys. And so then you just did different things, and finally he gave this example of the Prachetas. They married the daughter of Pramlochan. So we were talking about social philosophy in Peru one time, and this point about polygamy came up, and we're mentioning this is our point. And then one tourist, you know, girl there from Europe like that, she said, okay, that's okay. But if you also permit polyandria like that. And I didn't have much to say about it because it seems like, you know, it was kind of like a, you know, fair thing, you know. And so I didn't know what the problem was with it. Anybody know what the problem with polyandria is? The general problem?
Can you define that?
One girl with many husbands. Like andros, androgen, polyandria. And polygamia is one man, one male with many females. Yeah. So Draupadi is an example of polyandria.
Well, one problem that would be anticipated is that it would be difficult to know who is the father of the child.
Well, they're very strict. This is very, you know, Draupadi, it was no problem understanding. For 1 year, they would associate with one person like that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in a more, this is a more gentlemanly culture, you know. So I finally, if you read again and again, Prabhupada discusses the basic things over and over again. So we keep remembering, seeing. Ah, yeah, that's true. It sinks into our heart. Different perspectives, but he also keeps tossing in new facts, a little thing. He discusses everything. My gosh, so many details. The problem with polyandria is that just as we have different gross bodies. Male, female, frog, you know, Gandharva. The subtle bodies are also different. And in fact, the subtle body is more substantial, more permanent than the gross body. Right? It's just like, you know, somebody may change his automobile, but because of his particular taste and nature, he gets the same automobile, you know, one after another like that, you know. So same way, female mentality is different than male mentality, right? Different way of looking at things like that. It's just you've got this mind and intelligence which is different from male and female. So the Vedic description is that generally speaking, female mentality is gratified by being attached to one man. My daddy, like that, or a little girl, you know, loves her daddy. And he loves her. And my husband, you know, or my son. They're very attached. And so it's very difficult for a lady to give equal affection and love to several men like that and be equal. You know, when the Pandavas went back to the spiritual world, they all fell down on the trip, except Yudhisthira, because of different sins they committed. And Draupadi also fell down. What was her sin?
She loved Arjuna more than...
Yeah, secretly. She didn't let anybody know. She even conned Bhima into thinking he was her favorite when she wanted to get something done. You know, but really, she was just letting herself, you know, enter into a relationship more with Arjuna. It was just more gratifying, more natural. Yeah. So this is very advanced social psychology. You know, after you understand, from my experience, the Srimad Bhagavatam mostly is about Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma. It's about all these things about different natures of people in terms of Kshatriya, Brahmana, Shudra, men, women, children. And you become most educated person in political science. You become as intelligent as Shakespeare like that, about what is life and what are men and women, how they react. For example, one devotee in South America, big leader, very nice. He went to North America with his wife and children, and somehow or other they weren't going on so well, so he was wanted to get married again, one Indian girl. He's a little older, so he didn't want to have any more children. And she was younger, and she said, okay, now I'll be satisfied with my husband. I also don't have to have children. So anybody who's read Srimad Bhagavatam says she may even think that, you know, but it's not going to be a fact. After being married for some time, she's going to feel, want something more. And that's exactly what happened. So now they have this problem, you know, that he doesn't want to have any children, and she wants children, you know. Yeah. So read Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Understand all these things. Okay. What's going on here? But the Prachetas are underwater here, and before they come back out, we have a whole diversion to Priyavrata, so they can all hold their breath at that. So Canto 5, Priyabrata. And he's the last Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Dapup, Priyabrata. Yeah. So he was very wonderful activities, very magnificent pastimes activities. And he was the father of Agnidra, who was the father of Nabi, more examples of very good devotees. Every single psychological circumstance you can encounter is in Srimad Bhagavatam. So if you know this, every person you meet from these different examples and histories, you'll see what they are, how they're acting, you know, their mentality, how to relate to them, how to help them. You know? One time, when a devotee, we were in the Philippines, and one devotee wanted to know about hypnosis, so he started hypnotizing his wife, his Brahmachari then. And you know, she went into trance like that, you know, psychology and regression, whatever. Then all these white flies started coming in the room like that. Prabhupada says the Philippines are the land of the ghosts, you know. So it was something, we were messing around in some subtle area and somebody didn't like it. So all these like white flies started coming like that, little ones like that. And it was just like, okay, we stopped, and she woke up. So he got up and went and he turned around, there was blood coming down his face like that, you know. You know? So it turns out there was one pipe there, the samara had been cut off. And it had a sharp edge on it. And it's all by chance. You know. So anyway, we tried putting it. It was a very small cut, like this, like that long. Little pressure, wouldn't stop. Little pressure, wouldn't stop. Little pressure, wouldn't stop. So finally, we took him to a clinic near there. It was like, you know, it was an outdoor village clinic with grass huts and 2-3 doctors working. So the doctor saw us come in after a couple of people, you know, Chakravarti laid him down there. And he was more interested in talking to us about who we were and our culture and philosophy than he was with Chakravarti. And for him, it was just like a routine thing, like fixing an automobile or something, you know. He says, oh, yeah, yeah, you'll never stop. And he's cut, there's an artery there, a small artery in that part. So he's talking, he pulls the artery out, you know, ties it off, stuffs it back in, stitches him up like that. He's just talking to us. And, you know, Chakravarti, when the stitches are going in, he's quite going vertically off the table like that. He's just talking, you know, about, you know, why do you dress that way? What's your philosophy? But I was amazed because, you know, one side of the artery is going to be hot, other side is going to be cold. The blood's going to be flowing from one direction, right? So this guy knew, you know, where all the arteries were. He knew which side the blood was coming from. He just pulled that side out and tied it off. And then afterwards he said, yeah, gave him an antibiotic. He said, this is outdoor hospital. He's bound to have gotten some kind of like, you know, virus here or something like that. So antibiotic. So it's just like, you know, I mean, how many other different kinds of things could he deal with? You know, this is a doctor, you know, well-trained. You know? So first aid, you know, okay. You meet somebody, you say, chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam. Yeah. Read these books, come to the temple. What do they say? I don't know, but they're pretty good. I like them. I've been, you know, okay, first aid. And the next is a medic. You can get somebody stable for like maybe half an hour to get them to a hospital like that, you know. And then the intern, resident, emergency guy, he can maybe get you to the point where you'll make it through the night okay. The next day, a real doctor comes in and looks at the whole thing and he says, okay, look, your knee is really messed up. You know, we're going to do some surgery right away now to get it, you know, so that you'll be okay. But you're going to have to see an orthopedic surgeon eventually, have some special work done on it. So first aid, ambulance attendant, intern, doctor, specialist. Where are you? Right? Where is Srila Prabhupada? Srila Prabhupada would just look at people, you know, give a little test, ask a couple questions, challenge you and something like that, then Prabhupada would start, you know, dealing with you at the most, he would understand you. Many devotees comment that Prabhupada would just go right through everything. And it was just like, you know, might as well ask the ultimate question to this point because that's where this person is related to me like that. You know, one devotee came, he was Brahmatirtha. He was with Peace Corps. And he met Prabhupada, and he just came in and he said, oh, Swamiji, you know, I heard about you and stuff like that. And, I want to maybe ask him about Buddhism and stuff like that. And so Prabhupada explained a little bit, and so Prabhupada said, do you know anything about Buddhism, really? And he said, no. I don't know what to ask about. And Prabhupada said, all right, this, you know, what do you know? And he said, listen, and he said, okay, I'll tell you. And he explained everything like that, you know. So everything is here. So Maharaj Nabi, Abhidra, Rishabhdev, you know, Prabhupada quotes a lot from Rishabhdev, his pastimes. And then Rishabhdev was the father of so many sons, but the most prominent one was? Bharata. Yeah. So eventually he goes through several lifetimes and he meets Maharaj Rahugana, who was the king of the Siberians. And he then explains to him basically Bharat Rup, you know, pantheism again, the forest of material enjoyment. And then Maharaj Rahugana says, I couldn't understand it exactly. Could you explain it again? And so he explains it again. And then we go back to Sukadeva Goswami and Sudha Goswami and Sukadeva Goswami, no, I'm sorry, Maharaj Parikshit. And Maharaj Parikshit says, my dear guru, you know, Maharaj Rahugana heard it twice and understood it, but I still can't understand this. So the third time it's explained like that. And that's how we come in contact with the structure of the universe, all the different hells and the reactions like that in the fifth canto. So then in the sixth canto, Maharaj Parikshit says, now wait a second, everyone's going to go to hell because of their fruitive activities. Is there any way to avoid this, to save these poor people from hell? Everybody is going to end up there eventually. And so then Sukadeva Goswami says, yeah, you should do pious activities like that. And Maharaj Parikshit says, but look, that's not going to work. You can't, you know, all these things happen. And Sukadeva Goswami says, yeah, I was testing you. No, it won't work. You should engage in the development of knowledge. And he said, that's also not going to work. He says, yes, you're right. The only thing that works is bhakti yoga. Yeah? And the essence of bhakti yoga is chanting the holy names of God. And there's a very, very nice example of this in the story of Ajamil. And how he became totally impious, but he wasn't offensive. He just had an accidental fall down, you know. And he forgot about God for 60 years, for 55 years. He just forgot God. Oh, yeah, forgot God. You know? But it's, you know, devotees like this. I know many people have had this. They said they went to bed, they woke up as a different person. One nice boy. He graduated from high school and he got in bad association. One thing after, he started taking drugs, going to parties, and he started selling it and got involved in this whole thing and ended up in prison. And finally got out on parole and he was just visiting us because he had to spend some time with some kind of pious organization. And he said it was just when he finally was captured and went to prison, he said when he woke up, it was just like, wait a second, this is not me. I'm not like this. What happened? He went back when high school and how he just became like, you know, diverted like that. So Ajamil woke up and everything was finished off quickly. So he's an example of somebody who was impious but not offensive. Right? So you have to make this distinction. Somebody may be engaged in sinful activities, but they're not, it's not their nature. They're just caught up by their karma. We can talk to them.
Yeah. You mentioned that in the sixth chapter, in the sixth canto, sorry.
Yeah.
When the advice was given by Sukadeva Goswami that practice austerity.
Do pious activities.
Pious activities.
Yeah.
And then the response was, it won't work. And so he said, no, do bhakti yoga. But then in the fifth canto,
yeah.
The advice that Rishabhadev is giving to his sons is that he says, do tapasya.
Tapo devyam. Do tapasya for divine knowledge, like that. So he's talking about doing fruitive activities to counteract fruitive activities. But the goal of that is still fruitive activity. I want to counteract my sinful activities so I can enjoy. Yeah. So the acting fruitively does not destroy the desire to act fruitively. That's the point. Even if you counteract all your sinful activities, you become a pious person again, still, you did that because you wanted to become a pious person. You wanted relief, you wanted to enjoy, you know, so you're still caught up. So only by bhakti coming in from the outside can you get some taste for non-fruitive activity. Yeah, yeah.
Rishabhdev's advice to be taken to mean that it is tapasya connected to bhakti yoga?
Yeah. He describes that. Yeah. He says at least connected to transcendental knowledge. At least get a Mayavadi guru or someone like that, impersonalist guru. And don't be a fruitive worker. Yeah. Again, we're summarizing 18,000 verses in 20 minutes. You know. I've done this several times, and two times I started my watch and stopped it. Was 1 hour and 8 minutes, 108. So this is an authorized presentation. So we've already gone through six cantos. Okay, so that's why 1 through 3 he describes in, you know, he's finishing off 5. And then 4 through 6, we go back to the prachetas. Where are they? Underwater, holding their breath. They come out. They get married. And one of their children is Daksha. right? Because it wasn't enough for him to have his hard boot, his hard drive rebooted. He had his head cut off and had a new head put on like that. That wasn't enough. You know, he had to have more, you know, austerity to be purified from what he did, offending Lord Shiva. So he took birth again, because see, he's the Prajapati. He's the guy who's supposed to get bodies for everybody. You know, in the very beginning, Brahma is creating mental children, but it's going too slow. He has to get bodies for so many living beings. So then Swayambhuva Manu and Satyarupa agree to become the biological fathers of all these races like that. You know? And their real main child is Daksha. He's going to be the Prajapati, right there. But he can't do it because he's sinful. So different things happen. I'll cut through quickly. And he has, finally he has 50 daughters. And they marry all these, you know, bachelor sons of Brahma, like that. It's kind of Adam and Eve. And then one of them, how's this go? One of the, Aditi. One of Aditi's children is the Indra. But Indra kills Vishvarup, who's the son of Tvashta. And to get revenge, Tvashta then creates Vritasura. You know, it's a whole story. And this is actually in the Rig Veda also. It's one of the oldest stories in the Vedas, like that, the story of Vritasura. And that's about, you know, 8 chapters. Very nice, intense thing. Very wonderful discussions between Indra and Vritasura. So then finally, it describes all the rest of the children of Daksha. And Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakasipu, fighting with the demigods. So finally in the 7th canto, he asks him, well, wait a second, you say Krishna is equal to everybody. But in the last canto, you're saying he took the side of the demigods against Vritasura. So how can he be equal to everybody? So there's the whole story of Hiranyakasipu and how he wouldn't be God's friend, he wouldn't be God's servant. His only thing he wanted to do with God is hate him. Right? This is very unusual. You might find somebody who hates their family, hates the weather, hates their nation, hates their job, but to find somebody who hates God, right? He has pictures of God in his cubicle. He regularly spits on it regularly. You know, says, "I hate you, God. Go to hell, God." It's like, you know, people think, "Guys, Bob, it's like it's okay, Bob." It's like a little break here, you know. Yeah, it was right away. This is not an ordinary person. You know, okay. So that's the only thing you'll do. Then Krishna will reciprocate. So he reciprocated. You know, with an example is Hiranyakasipu, like that. So this comes from the 6th canto. And finally, there's a discussion of Narada and Vyasa. I mean, Narada and Yudhisthira discussing Varna Ashram. Yeah, and it's just kind of comes in there like that. Not a real lot of reason why it's there. There's a reason, but it's not a whole lot of detail. Okay, 3 cantos. Oh, cantos 3 through 7 in 15 minutes. This is actually a 3-day seminar. Do you see each of the children of Swayambhuva Manu on the right? Yes. The Bhagavatam tells about them and their children one after another. Okay. Canto 8. This is, in Canto 8, Maharaj Parikshit asks about the other 13 Manus. So one after another. Chapters 1 through 4, Manus 1 through 4, and the story of Gajendra comes up. Cantos 5 through 12, Manus 5 through 6, and Korma. Incarnation and Mohini Murti come up like that. That's why they're all there. Chapters 13 to 14 is Manus 8 through 14. And 15 to 24 is Bali, Vamanadeva, and Matsya. That's during one Manvantar. I forgot what it is. But Bali Maharaj, and then Vamanadeva comes to, you know, to trick him. Yeah. And then the finally, Matsya incarnation is there at the very end like that. And then in the next lifetime, okay, Canto 9, we hear about the current Manu, Vaivasvata Manu, and his descendants, which include Krishna. So in his previous lifetime, he was the person who discovered the fish, the Matsya incarnation. He was Satyavrata, one great king. Yeah? So in his next lifetime, he became Vaivasvata Manu. After that. So it's very difficult to get this job of Manu. Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, after that, probably has these whole genealogical tables. Really incredible how everybody begat so-and-so and all these things like that. But Vaibhasvata Manu was the father of Ila, who, and the story of Sukanya and Chaivana comes in their history, the story of Nabi. Then Ambarish, he was a descendant in this line. Then Vaibhasvata Manu was the father of Ikshvaku, who was the father of Subhara Muni, who came down to Mara Sagar, who comes down to Ram, like that. And the other side, Ila, who was the son of Swayambhuva Manu, is the father of Purava, who is the father of Yadu, in whose dynasty comes Krishna and Balaram, like that. So all these different descendants of and this is Manvantara, and includes finally Krishna and Balaram. So then Maharaj Parikha says, okay, click on the plus sign here. Let's expand out. Let's stop this and hear about Krishna and Balaram. So the entire 10th canto, most cantos are 30 chapters, pretty much. You can do one a day and finish them each month. But 10th canto is 80 chapters, 90 chapters. 1 through 3, birth of Krishna. 4 through 40, Vrindavan. 41 through 49, Mathura. And 50 through 90, Dwarka. Yeah? Yeah. And 11, 2 through 5, final Yudhisthira. Final instructions to Yudhisthira. All these in about the nine Yogendras. Yeah, there's many nice public quotes from those many times. There are instructions like that. Yeah. Then final instructions to Uddhava. This is what? 22, 23 chapters. 23 chapters. How big is the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, this is called the Uddhava Gita. 23 chapters. And so many instructions about what is this world, what is this life, who are these things. And then finally, 30 through 31, departure of the Yadus and Krishna. Yeah, departure of the Yadus and Krishna. So 11 is Mausala Lila, disappearance pastimes. Yeah. And 12, Nartam Das, Vishnu Chakravarti says, once you hear about the boat pastimes of Radha and Krishna, yeah, you'll want to hear about them again and again, like that. Yeah. So, but to hear them, otherwise you take them as fairy tales. Yeah? When you go through these things one after another, then you've got to even appreciate who is Krishna. You know, we probably won't do it in this lifetime. Have to take birth in Vrindavan again, and then we can really, a little bit, but no, really, who is Krishna? In the temple in Dallas, there's a temple. They have one whole block, they own like that in some houses. It was kind of a lower income area before. Older houses kind of falling down, small houses. So some real dacoity alcoholic guys were living there in the forest area before it was cleaned up. And they would go out in the daytime and harass people for money and buy alcohol. And they had made up a crossbow. This thing, you kind of pull it back and cock it like that. They made one of those. They were killing skunks. You know skunks? Yeah. They were killing skunks and cooking them. To eat. It's like real low-class guys, So finally they bothered one of the girls there, like that, maybe a 14-year-old girl and stuff like that, so she ran home crying and stuff. And they called the police, and to be a Dallas police officer, you have to be at least 6 feet tall. This is in Texas police officer. So they came and said, what's the problem? And they explained everything, and they went over, and it was nighttime. These guys are cooking their skunk meat with some fire, And then yelling at each other or whatever, So the police come over there. The way he told me that he was there, his daughter. So these two police guys there, and came over, and they point a flashlight in their face, and they say, come here, you boy, come here, boy, So the guy picks up his crossbow and points to this police officer. This police officer pulls out his .457 Magnum. Have you ever seen one of those things? No? If it would go through this wall, whatever automobile was in front of it, out the other side like that, it's about like this big. If anybody here, shot one of the things, the bullet would go forward and you would go backwards on the floor, So these police officers pull this thing out and points it at him. And he says, put down that boat. And this guy, leave me alone, I'll kill you, Funny. The guy points at the gun and says, do you see what I'm pointing to? Do you see what I'm pointing to? And the guy goes, ah! Like that, he's looking. Yeah, so this is, by the time you come to 10th canto, after going through all these things, now you finally realize, who Krishna is. He's so incredible that even Lakshmi and Narayan and Vaikuntha are looking at Goloka in amazement, you know, wishing to participate in these pastimes. You know. So don't worry, you've gone through all this in 15 minutes. You're ready. 12th canto finishes off the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu and includes a summary of Srimad Bhagavatam. Remember we left to see Krishna's pastimes? We go back. And it finishes off on down to Chanaka Pandit. It describes Andana at the end of that. And after that, it says there'll be no more dynasties. People will be just so degraded like that. 1 through 3 concludes the dynasty of Vaivasvata Manu. 4 through 6, the departure of Mars Pariksit. 7 through 13, glorious and summary of Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know what's next. General summary. I know him. He's in the U.S. Army. There we go. 1 through 2 are the lotus feet of Krishna. Got anything there? 3 through 9, Manvantars. 10 and 11, Krishna's pastimes. 12, epilogue. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Yeah.
Those who got there. Anjana Suda Academy, blah, blah, blah. So, koi prashna hai? No? Yeah, Mars Pariksha had a lot of questions. Yeah. 7 days and seven nights without eating or drinking. We'll be here. Yeah. Okay. We'll go backwards to the front then. Yeah.
This gives a good perspective of the overall Bhagavatam. Because in the Bhagavatam class, when we are doing individual verses,
Yeah.
We have been doing for quite some time Queen Kunti's teachings.
Yeah.
It is very difficult to place the significance of that
in
the overall context.
Yeah. Well, right here, since you happen to ask. See, I pay Dr. Joywald to ask these questions. Okay. This is in our seminar, Friday night, the Bhaktivedanta Library. Saturday morning, 1 hour, overview of all 12 cantos. Little coffee break with organic, with a non-vegetarian, what do I call it? Non-something coffee. Yeah, then we go the first two cantos, and this is in Spanish. This is very good. I can do this. You can do Spanish. You learn a little Spanish. Okay, this is okay. Spanish. Más cerca. Okay. ¿Dónde está? Chaitanya Lila. Chaitanya. Okay. Resumen de los primeros dos cantos. You understand? It's like English. Yeah, resumen, summary. Okay. Dividimos el primero canto en cuatro partos. We divide the first canto in four parts. Sutta talks to the sages of Naimisharanya, Narada to Vyasa, disappearance of Krishna and his associates, and the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Like that. Okay. Yeah. Preface. Introduction. Sutta to the sages, Narada to Vyasa, disappearance of Krishna and his associates, appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah? Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto is a preface. In the preface we find, can you read it? No? Proposito del libro, the purpose of the book, qualificaciones del hablante, qualifications of the speaker, qualifications del oyente, person talking, and the circumstances under which it was produced. Right? Circunstancias bajo las cuales fue producido. So you always find this in the preface. I'm a mathematics teacher at Campbell High School. We discovered there's no good books on calculus for high school students. So in 2003, myself and my students and other professors wrote this book on calculus for high school students. It's expected the student will have finished analytical geometry. So, what are my qualifications? What's expected? So, in the first canto, you find all these things. Okay. Who is the principal speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam? ¿Quién es el hablante principal de Bhagavatam? Sukadeva Goswami. Okay. ¿Quién es el oyente principal? Who is the principal person listening? Okay. ¿Bajo qué circunstancias se produjo? Under what circumstances was it produced? Yeah, the arrival of Kali Yuga. Yeah, different answers you can give like that. But that's the real purpose? ¿Cuál es el propósito del Srimad Bhagavatam? What's the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam?
To deliver the people in Kali Yuga.
Give refugio in Kali Yuga. Okay. Yeah. El prefacio del Srimad Bhagavatam por Srila Prabhupada, aunque son solo dos páginas, es un documento muy interesante. Puedes estudiar detalladamente con gran beneficio y utilidad. Even though the preface is just two pages, it has a tremendous amount in there, and you can study it with a lot of utility and benefit like that. You can actually put it up as a separate document about this is ISKCON, because Srimad Bhagavatam is ISKCON. So everything we're trying to do in ISKCON is right there. It's very, very worthwhile. Yeah. Okay. The introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam is a biography of 35 pages of Lord Chaitanya, principally. Little discussion about what is the absolute truth and what is the sum of monum, like that. But after that, 35 pages of biography of Lord Chaitanya. Because without the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you can't understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it's very difficult, like that. Yeah. Chapters 1 through 3 are the questions by the sages of Naimisharanya to Suta Goswami, and their subsequent responses. This is Srimad Bhagavatam complete. Yeah, the questions, the answers, more questions? No? Okay, go and preach. So therefore you find that most of Prabhupada's citations from Srimad Bhagavatam are in chapter 2. So many devotees memorize the entire second chapter because everything is there. The questions are there, the answers. Okay, then more details later. Yeah. Chapters 4 through 6 are the encounter between Narada and Vyas. Vyasadeva was dissatisfied after compiling all the different Vedas, but Narada instructed him that his dissatisfaction arose because he wasn't directly preaching the glories of the Supreme Lord. He mentions it, but very indirectly. And therefore, he had to... You know, he's like somebody opened a vegetarian restaurant, was organizing courses in Hatha Yoga and animal rights, but he was just... Something's missing, because you're not directly preaching about God. The Vedas talk about all these things for the mode of goodness, but not satisfying. So, 4 through 5, same thing. He has a problem. His spiritual master comes. He asks the questions. He says, any more questions? Yes. He answers those. No more questions? Okay. Now you expand it according to your ability. And through 7 through 15, it's the disappearance of Bhishmadev, disappearance of Kunti, disappearance of the Pandavas, disappearance of, you know, Krishna. And everybody's disappearing. And then, so now, because Krishna's finished his mission of incarnation, so he's taking everybody with him, like that. But there has to be an incarnation to protect everybody, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So the father is Sukadeva Goswami, and the mother is Maharaj Parikshit for this incarnation, like that. Yeah. 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 Okay, preface, introduction. Suta to the sages, Narada Vyas, disappearance of Krishna and his associates, Prince of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we've also broken this down later into groups. Pastimes right after the Battle of Kurukshetra, pastimes many years later, like that, and it falls into naturally into three or four chapters, each one. So in what they're doing in Texas right now, they're on their second year of this. First year they have 15 students, the second year they have 45. In three different groups like that. And you know, they're just appreciating it so much more, going through it in more depth. We've arranged it now in four levels of study. So then they have local groups, the internet, but every 3 or 4 weeks they have a big meeting, everybody gets together by the modules like that. So they're doing module work. So it's really coming nicely as a nice integrated program. And they say it works. After 3-4, you know, different groups, you all get together. He actually said he had to, the devotee, you know, in charge of the temple, he said he had to push everybody out the door because it was like, it was 10 o'clock, go home. Everybody had so many realizations they wanted to talk about. Yeah. This is Prabhupada's books. We divide the second canto into three parts. Sukadev to Maharaj Parikshit, Brahma to Narada, and Vishnu to Brahma. Right? 10 chapters. In the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami begins to instruct Maharaj Parikshit, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In three chapters, he explains pantheism, mysticism, monotheism, like that, or Sat Chit Ananda. Pantheism is there is a reality everywhere. Pantheistic. You know? The taste of water, the light of the sun, the fragrance of the earth, the shark amongst the fishes, the ocean, the body of, oh, everywhere you begin to appreciate God. If spirit is everywhere, Sat. And then you begin to see details. He's in my heart, like that. You can know him, Chit. And then finally you have a relationship with that God you know, like that, Ananda. So the first few chapters. First chapter is the first step in God realization. The second chapter is Lord in the heart. Third chapter is pure devotional service, a change in heart. Yeah? And yeah, okay. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Very natural. Find the same progression in the Bhagavad Gita also. Okay, any questions? This is the Maharaj Pariksit. Sukadeva Goswami says, he says, well, yes, yeah, wonderful, but I'm not going to go anywhere. Can you tell me the same thing again? So then Brahma, then Maharaj Sukadeva Goswami says, all right, I'll tell you how Brahma spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Narada, like that. And then the whole story is there about how Narada asked this question, my Lord, you hold the entire universe in your hand like a walnut, but I see you doing austerities to satisfy somebody else. Is there somebody higher than you? Then Brahma says, oh, thank you. You've seen the point. And he explains like that above him. And he especially explains how the universe functions, because he's an engineer. Everybody has a different perspective. But it gets into such complicated things about Sankhya, the different elements. He explains it about from four different angles like that, how the actual universe actually functions. So in terms of Sankhya, it's very complete. And from that, you can develop Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda, Vastu Veda, Danda Veda, Yantra Vidhi, right? But basic science, science 101, is there, you know, how things are related like that. Yeah. Okay. And after hearing the Bhagavad, después de oír el Bhagavatam que Brahma habló a Narada, Maharaj Pariksit está aún más animado, pero pide oír incluso más de la ciencia de Dios. Sukadeva Goswami entonces explica al Srimad Bhagavatam original. El Srimad Bhagavatam original, como Vishnu lo habló personalmente a Brahma. El canto termina con los sabios preguntando acerca del encuentro de Vidura y Maitreya. So he says, again, my master. He says, okay, I'll tell you the original Bhagavatam that Vishnu spoke to Brahma, like that. And then he goes through how he met him, the four basic verses, like that, everything else. So it's divided into three parts, Sukadeva to Maharaj Pariksit, Brahma to Narada, and Vishnu to Brahma. Yeah? Yeah? Did you notice that Srimad Bhagavatam was presented five times in the first two cantos? Complete. Every one of them is complete. You can take it like a separate unit. You know? Vishnu to Brahma. Where's that? Which chapters?
Canto 2.
Canto 2. Chapters?
Last.
Yeah?
Last.
7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, 2, 8 through 10. And then next, Brahma to Narada. Yeah? That's in 2, 5 through 7. And then Narada to Vyasa. Yeah? First canto is 4 through 6. And then Vyasa to Sukadeva Goswami. No, it doesn't occur. It's not there, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And then Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit. And then Sudha Goswami was listening. Yeah? So that he could explain it, he could explain that then to the sages in Naimisharanya. Yeah, yeah. So it's all there, coming down. So the Queen Kunti, what happens in that chapter is that Vyasa says, okay, Narada says, so now you should write Srimad Bhagavatam. So then Vyasadeva goes into meditation and contemplating the whole thing, the perspective, and he starts contemplating the background like that. And the background is that Maharaj Pariksit is going to meet Sukadeva Goswami. And it's not like, you know, Hana Parishak Swami talking to Dr. Jariwala. No, these are people much more qualified, you know, than their encounter. When did Maharaj Pariksit's Krishna consciousness begin?
When he was in the womb.
Yeah, when did Sukadeva Goswami's Krishna consciousness begin?
Wonderful.
Yeah, when did your Krishna consciousness begin? A little later. Yeah, yeah. So they're not ordinary people, you know. So he's contemplating this because knowledge is very personal. It's not impersonal. It depends who's talking about what's going to happen. So while he's contemplating all this, he's contemplating then the Maharsh Parikshit, which means that Ashwatthama is throwing the Brahmastra weapon. Kunti is and Uttara are coming to get protection. And then Krishna is going to go away, you know. So at that point, she asks and offers these prayers. Her whole purpose of her prayers is to get Krishna to stay, keep him from leaving, like that. And so finally, she says, you know, she's trying to figure out what makes him stay. Is it you incarnate to help the administrative kings? And Krishna goes, yeah, I come for that reason. You incarnate for this reason? Yeah, I come for that reason. You incarnate for this reason? Yeah, I come for that reason. And some say you come to revive the process of hearing and chanting. And then Krishna kind of smiles and says, ah, that's it. So as long as there's hearing and chanting about Krishna, he can never get away. You know. But then she worries, okay, but if you don't go back to Dwarka, my brother's family will be without you. Oh, what to do? My children, my brother. Oh, Lord of Madhu, may my heart flow to you like the Ganges flows to the ocean and never be deviated by anything else like that. You just do what you want to do. Yeah. So in the end, she can't understand who is Krishna exactly. So she says, Shri Krishna Krishna Saka, Vrishni Rishna Bhavani Drug, Apavana Darga Burga. You know, O Krishna, friend of Arjuna. Because she understands him, but she understands him better through Arjuna. And she appreciates that. My son is a closer friend of you than me, than my relationship. So I know you. You know. But she can't understand Yashoda. She says, I'm just bewildered. You're the master of the worlds, the God of gods, the creator of everything, and this country lady is chasing you around with a stick. Who is she? You know? Yeah? So very beautiful, you know, prayers. Yeah. This is to give a perspective. It's almost like just to give a perspective about so you can forget everything. You know? Now I see that, yeah, this is what I'm studying here is my connection with the elephant. Some people like to take the nose, some people like to take the ears, some people like to take the legs. I'm a tail man. hold on. You know. Here you start, elephants running down the road. Just hang on there. And ignore the different problems of being this part of the elephant. Right. Okay.
This is in
parampara order. Yeah, not in, well, yeah, it's chronological, yeah. Yep. Yes, sir. There's many problems like that. I won't mention other ones that occur. Time is not a line. Time is a line. Different cultures have different views of time. You can just, in anthropology, you can see, by the way. And even in physics, you have time-space continuum. Einstein used that, so it no longer was... You know, linear time is one accommodating thing we use like that. You know? But spiral time is another. You know? Same point again and again, but it's a line, but we're coming to it again and again.
But the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is not in chronological order, right?
No.
Yeah.
It's going forward. The didactic method to most of it is going through the Manvantars, and that's chronological, one after another, up to Krishna. It's all describing one day of Brahma. It's just describing one day of Brahma like that. There are Puranas left over from the previous day of Brahma, which describe Krishna's pastimes. A little different, like that. Heard that. Yeah. So first two cantos also very well organized, like that. Yeah.
And the fact that the Bhagavatam starts with Sutta day.
Sutta.
Yeah. Sutta Goswami. Sages of Namash,
yeah.
Would say that it's the bottom of the order by where it is starting.
Yeah.
Bottom of the chronology.
It's the most current moment. Yeah. Yeah. It's going back into the background like that, kind of, I think. See, Swayambhuva Manu, okay, Brahma's creating mental children. Atri, Narada, Shiva, Kumaras, Kasyapa, different mental children are being produced. But it's going so slow. So then Satarupa and Swayambhu Manu appear, and they're ready to become Adam and Eve, you know, produce biological children. But this is all happening at the level of steam. It's all like a dream. It's very subtle. So they say, if we want to have gross children, we've got to have gross bodies. So we have to go down to the earth then. We have to descend and become vapor and become liquid and become ice. We have to take gross bodies like that, you know. And so we'll do that. It's very, who wants to do that? But we'll do it for you. You're our father. And become biological fathers, mothers. But our dearest father, the earth is sunk in the Garbhodak ocean. Why is that? Because Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu stole it, you know. But Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu are the son of Kashyapa and Diti. Now, Diti is the daughter of Daksha, who doesn't occur until the end of the sixth canto. So, but again, there's this different time levels, you know, things happening before and after. In psychology, there's one experiment I participated in. You got to do these to get your degree. And it was three sounds. Okay. Now all you had to do is write down which came first, which came second, which came third. Whistle, click, buzz. So, okay, click, whistle, buzz, click, you know. But it was okay, it's boring. But after some time, they start becoming closer and closer together, right? Now, you got to really pay attention. Now, at one point, you can hear any pair, the first pair or the last pair. Click, whistle, or therefore, the buzz was third. You know, or buzz, whistle, therefore, the click was third. So, more interesting. And finally, they're going so fast that you can hear all three sounds distinctly. There's no, like, problem with, you know, what's a sequential event distinction. You can hear all three sounds distinctly, but you cannot distinguish which is first, which is second, or which is third, you know. So at least from that, we can suggest that time as a line is not an empirically validated experience. Because you can have events, which you can tell, you know, you can, by speculation or something, but it's not an empirically validated experience. That experiment directly. So which is first, which is second, which is third? You know, if you have a higher intelligence, higher abilities, you know, then you go back, you go forth, like that. You know, some cultures, they believe the things that are happening now are caused by what's happening in the future. You hurt your leg, and somebody will tell you, oh, you're going to kick an animal today. Just watch, you'll see, you're going to kick an animal today. And that's why it's what I did in the future. Yeah. And they live quite well in the world. They have, you know, like that. So E.T. Hall, one professor, so has very nice cross-cultural studies of time. And you can see we have one view of time. And we've developed a certain language and mathematics for dealing with it, you know. Yeah. So the points are right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One, two. Yeah.
One is with respect to the question of time.
Yeah.
Some say that it happened in the it happened in heaven, like in the kingdom of Indra, and some say it's a different planet. Where did it actually happen? I'm not very sure.
Well,
and sometimes there's another thing that it happened at
Ahobala.
Yeah.
Then again, Narsingapalli.
Yeah.
There's another. So, like, we had the same question in the heart. So are these pastimes happening every time, or just a
specific planet? Well, where are we?
Where are we?
Where are we? No, yeah. Okay. Are we also on the Western Hemisphere? Yes. Are we also in the United States of America?
Yeah.
Are we also in California?
Yes.
Yeah. So your consciousness is focused on this room, you know, like that. But it's a part of the city of Campbell, whatever it is, San Jose, like that. And that's a part of that is, you know, the county, like that, you know. So we're all in the United States, and the government here has complete authority to seize any property it wants to, right of eminent domain. They have complete authority here, but they give authority to us. And so within this loka, in the United States loka, there is one place, one house, which is the supreme house, and it's called the blue house, right? No. the White House, right? Yeah. And the person who has the karma to fit into that and do things, he has this, you know, right now, I mean, I don't know if George is watching us right now or not, but he could be, right? He has the power to, you know, to keep track of anybody and what's going on like that, you know, little cameras in the room or whatever like that, you know. So same way, you know, things can be, you know, happening grossly. That's what happens, you know. Jupiter, where we see a dirt ball floating in outer space with our instruments, that's Brihaspati Lok, you know. So that's the gross manifestation from our gross level, you know. There's a cockroach on the king's throne, on the throne of the king, and the cockroach is thinking, I am an intimate associate of the king. You know, yeah. It's like, so oh, I see Brihaspati Loka. You know, yeah, you see. It's low level. Most of that is occurring in subtle bodies, bodies of knowledge, bodies of thoughts, right? Yeah, these are bodies, and they're more substantial than the gross body. You take them with you, they get formed like that. So Lord, you know, on the level of Amaravati, Hiranyakasipu was starting at one level, you know, and maybe he went down to the earthy level, you know, to the gross body and stuff like that, to do austerities, because you can't do punya on a higher planet so easily. And he ate his body, and Brahma came, and, you know, so he was operating on different levels like that, yeah, manifesting on different levels. So maybe his appearance place on the earth during the Satya Yuga was Ahovalam, yeah. But that was, you know, now that it's Kali Yuga, you know, those things are all shrunken, dried out. Things that were there get lost in the wrinkles, you know. So, yeah. Yeah. It's a Sankhya. You start really understanding these, you see so many things to confirm it. That's how it actually works. You know, it's just a different, it's a much more sophisticated view of reality. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
I had a question about Sundays, the movie that you are going to show about.
Oh, yeah. Where is it here? We're trying to show it. We have problems with the movie.
So,
yeah.
Is this the same Padapadma thing that you are going to show?
No.
That's the light of.
Yeah, the Light of the Bhagavat, the movie, is the book, The Light of the Bhagavat. You know, this one chapter, this is what you, your whole lifetime you can appreciate. What can I study? What can I learn? So Prabhupada just did a whole separate presentation for that for one Congress. And it was very nice, you know, presentation. So we did the exhibition of the art in Peru. We gave conferences on different topics. And then we're making a movie each year. Peru's a place to make movies. So we asked Oscar and his wife Anna, who did our movie last year, if they want to do it again. He said, yeah, I'd like to do something. So he showed them this, and they said, oh, it's very nice. Look at the book, so nice, the pictures, and, you know. So we got copyrights for all the pictures for $385. And then he took it and took the images. And I mean, for example, he kind of reversed, just adjusts the order, so it follows a certain kind of logical sequence from this world to the, you know, the and Prabhupada's describing how in the Kali Yuga there's so many problems, so many bad things happening. You know, so he has images from the Vietnam War, from floods and stuff like that. Extremely, he's a very respected director in Peru. Puts it together, just, you know, really, really, it's like you appreciate. Yeah, this world's not nice, and we're kind of protected. But other countries, other places, there are people who are suffering. You know, caught up in wars and hunger and stuff. You know. So then after that, the next verse is, let's get out of here. And he has beautiful images of, you know, leaving. Then he has Krishna and Vrindavan. He has nice images like that and stuff. He mostly works with images, you know. And for example, what he does, he has one Peruvian guy painting the pictures with watercolors like that. And as the movie is going on, then it's like he kind of, it fades into the original picture then. But it's the same like that. It's just the same like that. You know? It's just like all these very interesting techniques like that. So then we're working on it because it worked on DVD players, other places, but it hasn't worked here. So we have copies, so we're working on it, you know. And that'll be tomorrow. It's about 35 minutes, like that. Yeah. Okay. The final question. Yeah.
Maharaj, two questions.
Okay. That's like, what's her name? Madhuri, like Madhuri.
And in the slide shown that Sukhdev Goswami, from whom did he?
Sukadeva Goswami heard Bhagavatam from?
I was in the womb of his mother for many, many months, and
didn't want to come out.
Years.
Finally,
but he
years. Years.
Years.
Yeah.
That from whom did he hear?
In the
Bhagavatam.
Forest, he heard it from Narada the Muni.
No.
He learned from Vyasadeva.
From his father, Vyasa.
But that connection not occurred.
No, it doesn't occur in the first canto. Not there.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought whether that relation did happen.
No.
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 He heard Bhagavatam.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's that particular Bhagavatam is not mentioned. I don't know why.
Maharaj, isn't there in the Sukadeva Goswami's life history that he had run away and he went to the forest to really do the tapasya and all that. And there, Vyasadeva sent some, I thought, with Narad Muni, who recited certain shlokas.
Mm.
And they really, his memory came back about this. And so he said, where are these from? So he said, well, they are from Srimad Bhagavatam. So he said, who is the originator of this? The sages who were there said, come with me.
Yeah.
He takes him back and he brings him back to his father.
That's not in the Bhagavatam.
But maybe
as I've seen there are like Puranic encyclopedias which give extracts from different Puranas, and of course some Puranas are tamasic, some are rajarshik, and some are sattvic, like that. And so I say this it sounds nice, sounds like it could have occurred, you know. But also there's one description which Prabhupada mentions, is that Sukadeva Goswami, because his father was in so much anxiety, then doubled himself and produced another Sukadeva Goswami who got married, like that. So that may be the history of that Sukadeva Goswami. Yeah.
Well, the message here was that this was that original Sukadeva Goswami
mm-hmm.
wanted nothing to do with the material world.
Yeah.
So he spent something like much longer time in his mother's womb.
Yeah, 16 years?
18 years.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah.
Then as he came out, he ran and he ran to the forest.
Yeah, he left.
He didn't
yeah.
want anything to do with the material
yeah.
world.
Yeah.
Then in the forest, his
yeah.
father sent the sages.
Yeah.
The sages went and recited the shlokas,
yeah.
and it was the sound vibration that
yeah.
attracted him. When he heard that sound vibration connected to something, he said, where do you get this
yeah.
from?
Yeah.
So he said, come, I'll show you, and brings him back to
yeah.
his father.
So that, it sounds like it's from another Purana, you know, the one descriptions I've heard, and it sounds like that's the point when he divided, because it describes he produced a second form, so his father could get the association like that. So original form kept on going, renunciation, other form returned and then became a sage, got married. Also, even after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, this is described in the Bhagavatam in the ninth canto, even after hearing it he was afraid if I come out I'll be entangled. It was already so advanced. And so then his father recited Srimad Bhagavatam and said, you won't get entangled. I'll teach you Srimad Bhagavatam. You'll never be entangled in the material world. So he heard that, and he said, but wait a second, you know, you're teaching me, but you're a grihastha, so you are attached, you know. So then Vyasadeva was in anxiety, so finally Krishna came from Dwarka and himself personally promised him. Then he took birth. But that's the description of the Bhagavatam. But the other Puranas describe other things like that, and sometimes there's Prabhupada cites them, sometimes he doesn't, you know, like that. So it's the Linga Purana. It's described in the Linga Purana, as I remember. Yeah.
How does the soul create another? I mean, consciousness is there in two different places, but it's the same soul? Sorry.
Multiplexing. Why not?
I mean, I thought it was possible for Lord, but even a soul.
No, it says that a yogi can multiply up to six bodies. These yogis, you know, like that. But they all kind of act the same way. But we've seen that many times. There's a description of one person incarnating in different people. But you know, our bodies are so fast and everything else. The demigods, for them, it's like what they're doing is they just, you know, if you actually see who am I. What you are is like thoughts come, and you look at something, you start going on with this, and another thought comes, you do something else.
Mm-hmm.
So the thoughts and the perspective is the Buddhi. What kind of perspective do I have on things? And that's just, you know, somebody can just generate that, like that, you know. So, you know, this other Sukadeva Goswami may have been you know, biologically, how he produced a second body, he may have gone up to the steam level, you know, produced his body, then had them both of them come back down to the gross level. Even, I mean, it's even my mystical yoga experience was in karate, for the most part, and I was studying this Okinawan style, Uichiru, and they were island champions sometimes. So they're like, well, you know, good, and they came from a Shaolin tradition, and a lot of the stuff we were learning, just like how to do it, when I started reading the Sankhya, then that's how it works. Because they didn't have any kind of general theory, very much theory of the whole thing. But they had techniques that worked. You know, you take like styrofoam cups, you put like six of them. Our fifth degree master could walk on those without breaking them.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you stand facing each other, you try and push the other guy off balance. That's the whole thing, is the whole technique of painting and stuff like that. So I've seen persons standing like this, facing. The guy would like bend backwards his knees like this, and come back up. You can't do that. It's not possible, you know. Because there, you know, the prana is coming out of the body. You don't see it, but you can feel it, you know, stuff. So this always mystical. Even now, there are people that are, because it requires a lot of austerity. You can do things that we can't. You know, Western science, you know, this anomaly like that. You can't do that. It's not possible. I don't see that. Some anomaly. There are ropes. There are thin plastic ropes holding them up like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Maharaj, I've heard that Sukhdev Goswami, he heard Bhagavatam from Shiva, and then he became a parrot, and then he entered.
Oh my God. Yeah, they're also, that may be before. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is not a, it's like a, what is it, like Shakespeare, like Hamlet or something. It's not like a thing that's written down exactly. Srimad Bhagavatam means the glories of Vishnu and his followers. And different acharyas present it, so the following people then present it the same way like that. They don't deviate, you know. So it's described that the higher planetary systems are Srimad Bhagavatams with hundreds of thousands of verses, millions of verses like that. And so, yeah, I think there's also the story that Sukadeva Goswami was listening to Shiva reciting Bhagavatam to Devi. Yeah. And then so he was, you know, Shiva chased him or something. And
no, but she slept.
Okay.
And he made the voice of Parvati.
Oh, okay.
He kept asking. So when Shiva came to the parrot is asking,
yeah,
he got angry.
No, he was trying to kill him. He ran away, right?
Yeah, he ran away. And yeah, he entered the womb. Mouth of Vyasa's wife.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. But there's also a description from the acharyas that originally he's Radharani's parrot.
Oh.
Like that. And so he incarnates just to participate in the pastimes. You know. I mean, even if it's all a fairy tale, it's more interesting than Harry Potter. It's like there's so many. In fact, you come to this point, it's this is so complicated and so actually integrated, though, that nobody could have imagined this. You know, especially primitive people living in caves and ancient Indians, they were all, you know, like that, savages until the British came and civilized them. You know? It was like, God, it's self-evident. People argue about who wrote Hamlet and stuff like that, who was the works of Shakespeare, like was it Christopher Marlowe or people like that and stuff. So Mark Twain said, the works of Shakespeare were written by Shakespeare or somebody else of that name. So, you know, these books were produced by, you know, it's self-evident. If you start going into this thing, you see this nobody could produce this. This has got to be produced by some super race of intelligent beings. The literature is just self-evident. You know, it's just, you know, this could not possibly have been produced by, you know, savages. You know, nowadays, people couldn't do this, you know. Yeah. So they know more than we do. So, okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So 18,000 verses. Take a break.
Namasye Purusham Paryam Ishtaram Prakrite Param.
Yeah. I heard Srila Prabhupada once say that even if all the scriptures are lost, then if Charitamrita is there,